Welcome to News Tribune on Tap. I'm Gary Caster, managing editor at the Jefferson City News Tribune and host of News Tribune on Tap, a weekly conversation about news and issues in Jefferson City that matter to you. Today's special guest is Nicole Roberts-Hillen. Hello, Nicole.
Hi, Gary.
So I got to say, I struggled with that lead in there because I've known Nicole as Nicole Roberts for many years. She was our city government reporter. When did you start here, Nicole?
June of 2017. I was a new grad.
There you go. She hit the ground running as a city government reporter, did a fabulous job, and transitioned to a variety of other positions before leaving the News Tribune. And full disclosure, we had a city government opening that we needed to try to fill, and Nicole has been filling in for us as a city government reporter for the past few months, and so we're bringing her in today to talk about Capitol Avenue. Nicole, kind of give folks an idea of Capitol Avenue. It's a historic corridor that basically stretches from MSP up to Monroe, thereabouts. And so it's got a lot of historic properties on it, but it also has a lot of dilapidated buildings on it. So give us a kind of a brief history of how this all came about.
Yeah, so the main properties that you're talking about in terms of historic value would primarily be the 400 through 600 blocks of East Capitol Avenue and some of the properties that are around that corridor, so including like Jackson Street tends to have a lot of properties that are historic. But in terms of the dilapidated buildings that you mentioned, there are several buildings that are historic. They've been around for probably 100 plus years, but they have fallen into disrepair due to several property owners. It's not just one, but there is one in particular, or family, that owns a lot of the properties, and that'd be the Barbara Busher family. And pretty much these buildings have been in the family for 50 plus years. I don't know the exact years off the top of my head. And from what I understand, what I've been told specifically by Ward 5 Councilman Mark Schreiber is that the Busher family bought these properties many years ago because they didn't want these properties to honestly go away. They loved the historic value of it and they saw a lot of potential in these buildings. But after Mr. Busher passed away, from what I understand, they didn't have the resources or the manpower to keep up with these properties, and the properties then just fell into disrepair. And over the years, these properties have had to be repaired primarily by the city. The city has tried to get Barbara Busher to repair the properties by either repairing such things like broken windows from people trying to break in, doors have been busted in, floors that have fallen through, roofs that have fallen through. I believe there was a chimney on one of the buildings that was about to fall over. So the city has asked Busher to fix these properties, but usually she doesn't. So then the city has to go in and fix them. When there are properties that have certain nuisances that can create a life safety or a public health issue, these buildings can be listed as dangerous buildings. And that's what a lot of the buildings on Capitol Avenue are now. They're dangerous buildings. So they are seen as dangerous to the public in terms of they could threaten either the owner or occupant or somebody walking by the houses. It could threaten their health. It can threaten their lives in various ways.
So, and we're talking probably somewhere around 30 to 40 properties that the Bushers own.
I want to say 30, but I am not 100% sure on that.
Okay. But the point being, there are many. It's not a few.
Yeah,
there are many properties. There's also an element where they've been the site of criminal activity or homeless folks breaking in, staying in there, which has led to a condition where the city believes that area is blighted, that it has a very dark future ahead of it and as far as development, as long as those structures exist and are allowed to continue to deteriorate. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah. And that blight study occurred, I want to say in 2016, I believe is when that study came out. And yeah, pretty much the buildings in that area were so dilapidated that it created a blight issue in that area. And it was pretty much said that if something wasn't done with the properties in that area, that they would eventually just have to be demolished because the properties would just keep deteriorating.
Right. Yeah, because it's not just the element of, I mean, the weather can be harsh on a home, you know, especially if there's not maintenance on it. If moisture gets into the home through the roof, the windows, it can certainly escalate the deterioration of the building. So as part of this blight study, then, the city came up with kind of a plan as to how to start remediating this. And so kind of walk us through how the program, in conjunction with the Jefferson City Housing Authority, how they, in the last, let's say, five years or so, they have really tried to target some of these homes and to present them in a way where they could be redeveloped.
Yeah, so, and I will just specify that the Jefferson City Housing Authority and the City of Jefferson are two different entities. So when I talk about the Housing Authority, I'm not talking about the city. I feel like that's something that a lot of people get confused on.
Fair point.
So pretty much after the blight study, the city and the Housing Authority created essentially a partnership where the Housing Authority would attempt to acquire these properties. And when I say acquire these properties, they're not going through and trying to acquire all the properties on East Capitol Avenue. These are buildings that the public has deemed as important for various reasons. So since about, I want to say 2017, I believe it is, the Housing Authority has worked with property owners to either ask them to repair these buildings or has asked them to sell the properties to the Housing Authority. And there have been a couple situations where property owners have voluntarily given the properties or sold the properties to the Housing Authority. But in most cases, when it came to Barbara Busher, who owns some of the properties, when the Housing Authority has asked her if she'd be willing to sell, she has said no. And because of that, the Housing Authority has decided to go through the eminent domain process. And essentially, through that process, it goes to the court and it shows a bunch of documents. It shows how it has tried to acquire these properties and why the Housing Authority should, in fact, take ownership of these properties. And pretty much ever since 2017, they have filed, I want to say they're on their third one, if I remember correctly. And so far, they have acquired 9 properties. They have sold 8 of them to private entities, but they are also in the process of trying to acquire 5 more properties on this third eminent domain lawsuit. And through this process, when they do acquire a property, they will seek bids from redevelopers, asking them what they would do to revitalize these homes. Mm-hmm. Once they get in the bids, the Housing Authority will review the bids and they will select a property owner to sell this property to. And they create a contract with the interested redeveloper and will give them a timeline for when they can have these redevelopments done, essentially.
I think that's what's interesting about these programs, and it's very insightful on the part of Housing Authority or the city or whomever, that there are specific timelines, you know, that this can't be another 10 years down the road, oh yeah, mm-hmm. property owner Y was going to do it, but then price of lumber got more expensive than they expected. These are very much, you need to have this done by this date and show progress so that it does address the blight that the city has said exists in that area.
Yeah, and if I remember correctly, I feel like most of the timelines were 18 months, I believe. But if there is a property owner who is trying to rehab one of these properties and say they run into issues, they can seek extensions from the Housing Authority, and that's happened sure. on some of the properties. But in general, the Housing Authority does ask the property owners to rehab these properties in a timely fashion.
Right. So in a couple examples of homes that were part of this program or still are would be Ivy Terrace, the Parson home.
Mm-hmm.
Two examples of what I would say the city probably would argue are examples of the success of the program as far as you're seeing it actually being transformed or have been transformed into more safe conditions, better realization of what that historic district should be looking like.
Yeah, and I would say the Standish House is also a great example. That property was sold to a family, and they have rehabbed that house, and they have actually documented their progress through a blog online. So if anybody is interested in wanting to see what that rehab process looks like, that family has done a great job on showing exactly what it took for them to get the Standish house to a livable condition.
Before we jump into the discussion about these 14 properties and the ordinance that the city council is considering, I will say you're right. The Standish House, the work that's been put in by these redevelopers, the folks who really want to redevelop this area, I mean, they're passionate about it. I mean,
oh, yeah.
First of all, they put their money where their mouth is. I mean, this is not easy work, and it's not cheap work either to rehabilitate these. So I'm always struck during these discussions about how, whether it's a historic preservationist or someone who just sees the value of the home and the potential for it, how passionate they are about it. So let's get to the council and the ordinance that they're talking about. So kind of lay out for us what this ordinance sought to do.
Yeah, so the council recently approved a bill that would authorize the supplemental appropriation, pretty much setting aside funds, to either repair or demolish 14 properties. They initially outlined 12 properties that they would seek to demolish and 2 properties that they would try to repair. And they try to set aside $575,000 for this. And also as part of this, it would be to also reimburse the housing authority for acquisition costs that it accrues while trying to acquire properties. And then the funds would also cover the legal costs that are associated with the acquisition process.
Okay. So to be clear, it's not that they're looking for this $500,000 and basically the bulldozers are ready and they're going to be bulldozing these down as soon as the check clears. I mean, this is more, they're establishing a fund that they could tap as they needed.
Yes.
Once they saw perhaps if a home had reached a spot where it could not be rehabilitated but needed to be demolished, they wouldn't be constrained because they didn't have the cash on hand to deal with it.
Correct. And this bill does just simply set aside the money. If city staff does want to demolish a property, there is a process that they would have to follow. They would have to get demolition bids. They would have to present this to the city council. I mean, there's a process that would have to be followed. You're not going to see bulldozers over on East Capitol Avenue this week or anything
right.
like that.
Right. So I think one of the things that maybe caused some concern among some historic preservationists, others who are real proponents of that corridor, was this aspect that, and maybe it's a subjective thing, that the homes had more value and could be saved, was their contention, that they didn't want the city staff, city council to rush to judgment on some of these homes. So let's kind of talk about how they determine when a home is past the point of no return, right? Where you're being foolish for pouring money into this home. It's just basically a pile of lumber at this point.
So the city does have guidelines that it has to follow. They are outlined in its city code, and from what I understand, these guidelines come from state statutes. And pretty much if there is a property that is dilapidated, and if it would take more than 50% of the fair market value of the home to bring it back into code, so that we fix all the nuisances, then under city code, the city would have to demolish the building. And I think that's where some of the confusion came in, is the 12 properties that the city listed as having to be demolished, these were properties that they found would meet that guideline, if that makes sense. So pretty much it would cost more than 50% of the property's values in order for the city to fix these properties. And that's why they were listed as having to be demolished. But now the city does have a priority list is how I would describe it in terms of what properties should be demolished. So just because these 12 properties are listed as the city having to demolish them, that does not mean the city is going to go in and demolish them the next day. The city is going to focus on the properties that it deems as an immediate life safety issue. And I want to say there was 4 properties, if I remember correctly, that the city would seek immediate demolition for, and they still have to go get the demolition bids for that. But the other properties that were listed, since they are not an immediate life safety risk, they will remain standing until they do become a priority for the city. So that's why Dave Helmig, the Jefferson City Property Housing Supervisor, he said that the properties that are left remaining or that are left standing because they're not a priority to demolish right now, that they could be rehabilitated and the city may not have to demolish them. And I think that's where the confusion was, is a lot of historic preservationists saw these properties listed as having to be demolished and they thought the city was going to demolish them immediately. Mm-hmm. And that's not the case. So Dave Helmick has said that there are chances that these properties could be rehabilitated, but they would have to be acquired because at this point, all those properties are owned by Barbara Busher. And I mean, she may sell the properties. She may have a change of heart. There's always that opportunity. But as of now, it looks like the properties will either have to be acquired by the housing authority or by another entity for the properties to be rehabilitated. And if the properties are not rehabilitated quickly, then there is a higher chance that they're going to be demolished.
Right. I think that's one thing that I found really interesting is that, and I think it was Helmick was talking about just the safety factor of himself and others going into those homes. Some of those homes, I mean, it's, they, not that they're taking their life at risk necessarily, but I mean, it's a dangerous situation,
oh, yeah.
Right? And I think the flip side of that is you had historic preservationists saying, because we don't have full access to the home to really assess, maybe the problem is not as unfixable as it appears, you know, and these are folks who have dealt with older homes that have more challenges than a new home might as far as rehabilitating. And so I think that was an interesting aspect that maybe they will be able to work together to get a better assessment of how dire the situation is on some of these homes.
Yeah, that was an interesting thing that the city council reviewed and voted on, not this last Monday, but the Monday before that. Pretty much the initial bill stated that the city could set aside funds to potentially demolish and repair these properties. And the substitute bill that was proposed at the most recent city council meeting, it added a clarification line in the bill stating that the city staff, if they wanted to demolish a property, they would have to present a plan to the city council stating how they plan to seek redevelopers or find redevelopers for these properties, or if that's something that they've already have tried and haven't been successful at, as well as if there are any properties that they feel are an immediate life safety risk and would have to be demolished immediately. So they're going to have to provide documentation and a plan to the city council for each of the properties that they want to demolish or if they want to try to find redevelopers. And the Historic City of Jefferson has given its blessing on this bill. Several representatives spoke on the bill and they said that currently they are trying to find financial help to incentivize redevelopers to take on these properties. And there were several redevelopers who spoke last month who said that they were already interested in these properties.
I think that was the thing also that kind of surprised me, the number of folks who basically said, hey, we're interested in it. I mean, there's not a shortage of folks who, at least at this point, are saying, yeah, give us an opportunity. We see the potential there. And my understanding is maybe they're trying to create a list of those developers to really get a better sense of what their visions might be.
Yeah, I know that there was one person in particular who he said that he was interested in potentially 6 properties, and the city council asked him to send them an email saying which properties he was interested in, and I think kind of what his visions were for those properties. And I mean, he said that he was interested in about 6 properties. I believe Donna Dietz, who is the Historic City of Jefferson president, she said that she knew of a couple of people who were interested in the properties and who were waiting for the housing authority to potentially acquire those properties. So there are definitely people interested, but there also is a little bit of a caveat. A lot of these redevelopers are seeing the properties from the outside, mm-hmm. but as Dave Helmick has pointed out, when you enter the properties, it can go south pretty quickly.
Sure.
So,
sure.
I mean, a property could look like you could rehabilitate it on the outside, but then the minute you get inside, you realize that it may not be worth it, or it may take way more money than you initially thought to bring this property into code.
Yeah.
So I think that that's something that historic preservationists in the city and the housing authority are having to deal with.
So what are the next steps, Nicole?
So the next steps would be, right now the housing authority is in the process of acquiring 5 properties along East Capitol Avenue. They don't have official ownership of the properties just yet, but they're very, very close. So that's one of the things that we're waiting on, because if the Housing Authority gets ownership of those properties, they will reevaluate the properties, see if they are worth essentially putting on the market, asking for bids. So that's one next step.
So one of the next steps would also be then the four properties they've identified as the most dangerous that probably will need to be demolished, correct?
Yeah, and the properties that I've been told they're wanting to demolish immediately due to being a immediate life safety issue is 104 Jackson Street, 108 Jackson Street, 113 Adams Street, and 401 East Capitol Avenue. But the thing to remember is that the city does not own these properties, even if it wants to demolish the buildings. Barbara Busher still owns these properties, and if the city demolishes these properties, there would be a tax lien that would be placed on the properties that Barbara Busher would have to pay. And I think that there also is some misunderstandings, because I think residents think that since the city can demolish a building, that they own the buildings.
Right.
And that also means that the city can market these buildings. And since the city does not own the buildings, it cannot market the buildings.
Right.
It would have to acquire the properties in order to market these buildings to redevelopers.
So in essence, they're removing the threat by taking down the structure, but the property owner still owns it.
Correct.
And whenever that property owner would sell that property, whether it's by actually going out and selling it himself or herself, or dying and leaving it to an estate, before the proceeds from the sale could happen, the city would take the abatement costs that they have accrued on that property.
Yes, so the tax lien would have to be paid.
Yeah.
And the city would get that money back. Another next step would be pretty much trying to find redevelopers who are interested. And I believe the Historic City of Jefferson is already in the process of that. So I think that as long as there are people who are interested in these properties, then you're always going to have a possibility of these buildings being rehabilitated.
Okay.
So, sorry, that's like a very like general statement. There's not a clear direction right now, because we're kind of in the waiting game right now.
Right. Well, and I think that's been the history of Capitol Avenue, quite honestly, in this whole redevelopment effort, is that there's not a clear path. There are a variety of shoots of paths that go off of this, and it's kind of a waiting game, quite honestly.
Yeah, and I know that's not the thing that people want to hear about East Capitol Avenue, because it feels like there has been a lot of waiting. And I know council members have expressed frustration too. I think there were a couple of them at this last city council meeting that said that they did not want to wait another 10 or 15 years to take action.
Sure.
And when I say that there's a waiting game, I don't think we're going to be waiting 10 or 15 years, but we're most likely not going to see improvements tomorrow.
Right.
It's going to be a while, especially as Housing Authority works through the acquisition process and then finding redevelopers and giving them time to rehab the properties. We're potentially looking at a couple of years,
sure,
at least, for just the properties that haven't yet been acquired but are in the process of being acquired.
Right. Well, and then there's a third camp, I would even argue, those who have already invested a lot of money in that area in, mm-hmm, developments, that was that a good investment, or is all of a sudden the city going a different route, and that this dream of a revitalized Capitol Avenue is not going to happen? I mean, if I've invested millions of dollars in properties already, that has to be a concern I would have as well, that the sustainability of this effort, I don't want to wait 15 years, you know, 2 years even seems like a while.
Yeah, and there were a couple property owners in that area who expressed that exact thing. Holly Stitt, in particular, she owns several properties along East Capitol Avenue, and a lot of people would also know her as the owner of Avenue HQ, which was destroyed by the tornado. And that's one of the issues in East Capitol Avenue, is not only do you have the dilapidated buildings that have just gone in disrepair because of not being taken care of over the years, but you also had a tornado go through to there too. But she has invested millions in that area already, and she, or even plans to invest millions in that area. And she had asked the city council if it was worth her investment, because she believes that it was. She believes that Capitol Avenue is worth saving. But if she feels like the city isn't going to try to save these properties, then is it worth it? Is it worth that time and energy and money?
Sure.
And I believe council members have tried to reassure residents that they do want to save these properties, but there's just a lot of things that are going on that they have to also take into account, like the buildings being dangerous, if they are worth saving, if they need to be demolished, if they can even find redevelopers. Because I know, for example, the Parsons house, everybody thought that that house would go immediately to a redeveloper, and it actually took a couple of bid cycles, if I remember correctly. Yeah. I think that a lot of entities do want to see these properties safe, but it's just trying to not only wait, but also make sure all the puzzle pieces fall into place at the right times.
Yeah. Seems as if the motto is great potential, but no simple solution.
There is no simple solution. And I think everybody can agree on that one.
All right. Well, Nicole, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for listening. You can find News Tribune on tap at newstribune.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play.